Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Brett Rutherford, joined, as always, by Darby Robinson. Darby, this is like our third podcast in like 7 days. This is the most we've ever recorded, I think, since we started this. But the Rays are well into the second half, well past the trade deadline now, and they are rounding back into form. I had a great road trip, three straight series wins, concluded on Sunday in Detroit with a very interesting win against the Tigers. Obviously, the Orioles are still setting the pace in the American League East, but I think we can confidently say now as Rays fans that we're in a much better place in terms of how the team is playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think getting back to series winning, you know, it's like, the Orioles are never losing, so you can't really, you can only worry about yourself. And getting back to just winning baseball is so key, you know, avoiding those losing streaks, but getting series wins, you know, two out of three, that just slowly extending that lead, that's either maintaining pace behind Baltimore for the division, it's extending your lead on some of the other wild card teams, it's just getting later in the season with a high win percentage. And yeah, no, that's, it's been much needed, especially even when you haven't been like completely back to form. Like the Rays are not close to being back to even like the May level, but if they can get kind of to that, you know, June level and moving towards May, you know, getting that more improved, then that would be really key. And they're going to need to do a lot of winning down the stretch with Baltimore playing so just dang well. Absolutely butchered the Mets. There's just no help there. Baltimore, I mean, we'll see if they slow down, but if the Rays can just keep winning series, that's what they need to do.
Yeah, there was a cut in on Bally Sports today. They're showing live updates from the Orioles game. And it was Felix Bautista pitching the ninth. Two-run lead. Dan Vogelbach up to bat with a runner on against Felix Bautista. I'm like, uh-oh, did he just tie the game? No, he didn't. He struck out, and the Orioles won again. But like you said, getting back towards maybe that June period, and maybe what we're seeing right now and what was in June, maybe that's the real Ray, 2023 Rays, right? April, May, incredibly hot. July, incredibly cold. And we've talked about on this podcast, what can we expect from this team moving forward? Because the answer was probably always going to be somewhere in the middle. And I think that's what we're seeing. And I think it's a really good team, what we're seeing. And the recipe to getting there is your core of your lineup, your star players, your all-stars, right? Yandy Diaz, Wander Franco, Randy Arozarena, even he's still maybe running a little bit cold. Brandon Lau is back in there now. Those guys are all playing like all-stars. Then game to game, maybe you get an extra contribution from Luke Rayleigh, from Harold Ramirez, from some of these other guys throughout the lineup. And that's kind of the identity for not only this Rays club, but I think that's just the identity to having a winning team.
Yeah, I think some of the best teams, you have to kind of be built that way, where you have your glue guys, your core, your stars lead the way, and then you have these solid contributors throughout. If you don't have those solid contributors, you kind of turn into the 2023 San Diego Padres, which has maybe like the best top four, all-star lineups. And then the rest were just very mediocre role players who all really struggled. So you look at a team like the Braves, everybody's like an all-star, but even the guys who aren't contribute really well. The Dodgers consistently have that. The Astros have consistently had that, you know, for every Bregman and Altuve and Tucker and Yordan, you get these solid contributions. Like Martin Maldonado has been a solid contributor for them. Chaz McCormick, those type of guys are key. So like a guy like Jose Siri, he can have a big game like he did recently against Detroit in the Apple TV game, get that home run, get some nice catches in there, get some nice base knocks as well. Like that suddenly then takes you over the top, because if you're getting those home runs from Lau and you're getting that consistent contribution from Yandy and Wander, then everything else is just that extra bit. It's that extra sauce, and you need it. You cannot survive alone on Randy and Wander and Yandy carrying you, but you cannot also survive alone on the depth being the thing that just carries through games. When those top guys struggle, like we saw in July, it's just hard to beat. You know, you cannot get over that hump, but you just need those guys to lead the way. And then I think the depth is there that they're going to get at least some contribution every day, a little bit. And it's just, if that's enough, you're going to get some winning baseball. And that's this last week or so, as August has turned over, it's gotten there.
It sure has. It's been fun. Now the team will return home. There was an interesting addition on this road trip, and that was top prospect Curtis Mead, right-handed hitting corner infielder, who has been, you know, the Rays acquired him from Philadelphia in a trade that involved Christopher Sanchez, who is now pitching really well for the Phillies. Mm-hmm. But Curtis Mead has developed into not only one of the best Rays prospects, but one of the best prospects in all of baseball. He is now up, and I wasn't sure if we were going to see him at all. I figured he'd get a cup of coffee, but he was called up. Vidal Brujan was sent down today. There's been some other moving around with the roster, and we'll get to that later on the pitching side of things. But Curtis Mead is up. He's not going to play every day. Obviously, you've got Yandy Diaz at first, Isak Paredes at third. But there is some room to move those guys around, give them some rest. You've got the DH slot. First off, how excited are you to see now Curtis Mead, what he can do at the big league level?
Oh, it's super exciting. I wasn't sure. We've sort of talked about this when it came to Aranda a lot, because he's been hot in the AAA, of just sort of how does it fit onto the roster? Where does the playing time come from? And Curtis Mead was sort of in that same boat of, you have a guy who has been tearing up the ball in AAA, who's clearly done everything he needs to prove from an offensive standpoint at that level. Not saying that it's going to be immediate success in the majors, but there is a certain point where, okay, we know he can hit AAA pitching. Great. Can he contribute in the majors? And can he get that taste of the show that maybe it's not this year, but next year it's locked in? We've seen that from like a guy like Josh Lowe, who took a big jump forward, and kind of every player. Usually when you're a rookie, you're not that good. Even Randy, who was a rookie for about 3 years, he had some playing time. He got some postseason playing time with St. Louis before coming over to Tampa Bay to then, you know, do the amazing 2020 that he had. So seeing that text or seeing that the tweet that Curtis Mead was getting called up was pretty surprising in a lot of ways. There was the off day, and Durham posted their lineup, and in our Slack, I noticed that there was no Curtis Meade, and the Rays do tend to, when it comes to a big prospect, like to do the off day call up. That happened with Wander. It happened with another pitcher as well. I can't remember, but there's sometimes that little bit of an off day call up that maybe that setup where there was, what would you change? How would you mix this in? But I was excited and very excited to see him come up. And I've been each day really fascinated to see how does he fit on the current roster and going forward? Like what is this call up? Because frankly, I just don't think you call up Curtis Meade right now just to be a bench bat, just to be a guy that gets into the rotation. If you need that, you call up Jonathan Aranda. If you need a guy for like a day or two or a series, you call up Aranda because he's already used his option. He's already come up. He's been used to that. Calling up Curtis Meade, to me, and I'd love to hear your take, it suggests to me he's up here not for a series, but he's up here for good, or at least for a long haul.
Yeah, it sounds like it's for good unless, you know, injuries happen or other things get shuffled around. There will be no more trades because the trade deadline has passed. It's a weird fit right now because he's like one of the only infielders that you have, maybe, you know, like on the bench. Like he's the only Harold Ramirez can place him first, but who is the backup shortstop? Like Vidal Brujan is now sent down.
So that was the question, right? So every time, and people online were constantly, every highlight, because every day Jonathan Aranda hit a new home run, and everyone was like, you got to call him up. And the response every time, hating to be a killjoy in all this, but it was like, how? Who do you take the place? Like, you're not going to run 12 pitchers. You're not going to run short on that because, I mean, the Rays need more innings, so that nobody really does that anyway. Two, where does he play? I mean, that was the thing. Wander is the shortstop. Nobody else on the roster besides Brujan and then Walls, who this is the first time, I think it was today or yesterday, I forget when Brujan got sent down. That's the first time, I think it was today, that the team has not had Vidal Brujan or Taylor Walls on the active roster for 2 years now.
Yeah, wow.
It's been those two guys who have needed to be, they have not played, like Walls has played a lot more than Brujan, but they have played the role of, if Wander needs a day, or if Wander needs to be subbed out, or if Wander gets hurt, that's who can play shortstop.
Right.
So this is a big move. It was sort of like, how does this work? Now, calling up Curtis Meade suggests to me, because somebody mentioned this, why Curtis Meade, if you're going to do this and you're going to send Brujan down, you are saying basically you're fine with running without any true shortstop. And if you do need to have in a pinch, in an emergency, somebody to stand at short, I think it's Isak Paredes, who has played short in the minors a long time ago. He's never played in the major leagues. I don't think he'd be very good at it.
No.
But he also, he is not a guy you're probably going to start ever there. But there's a lot of off days in August, so you can potentially, you know, say Wander, if it's a game, he's playing, and Wander does play most of the time anyway. But in a pinch, you could have Isak Paredes. But that is interesting that you're deciding, okay, we don't need a backup shortstop. We can go with an emergency shortstop like Paredes. It's kind of like, you know, running one catcher. It's like, okay, maybe this guy can stand at catcher, but like he can't really play, so we might have to do that. It's such an interesting move because they've not done this until now, which really suggests something in their idea of what they think of Curtis Meade.
For sure. Yeah, because you typically, right, want to have a backup catcher. You have to have a backup catcher. You know, I mean, the league doesn't mandate it, but you'd be really silly if you didn't. Typically, though, a backup infielder that you trust their defensive abilities enough to play shortstop, and an outfielder that you would trust their defensive abilities to play center field. And then that last bench spot, maybe you go with like an offensive first guy. And so, like, if it was Brujan over Meade right now, you'd have Pinto as your backup catcher, Brujan as your backup shortstop, Margot as your backup center fielder, and then like either Harold Ramirez or Luke Raley or Josh Lowe, whoever's on the bench that night, being the more of the impact bat you can bring off the bench.
Yeah.
Now, not only do the Rays have Meade in that spot, so he definitely will not play shortstop. It would be Isak Paredes. It wouldn't be Brandon Lowe either, unless you were really, really in a pinch. If you were like DHing Paredes, but even then, you'd probably just pull it and then get that.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen. But you're also at the point where if something, knock on wood, were to happen to Wander, where he'd have to miss time, you'd imagine they would just bring Brujan right back up.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, we're talking about covering shortstop for a few innings, you know, at most.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think there's two things why you do this move now and you didn't call up Aranda to do the same thing before. One, we actually have days off now, which through most of the season, there is just basically a lot of games in a row with maybe 1-2 days off in the entire month. So that's a long grind. In August, there are several days off. There's one coming up on Monday. There's a couple more the rest of this month. That gives you an opportunity for Wander to get some rest without having to miss games. Two, Jonathan Aranda is a butcher in the field. He's a fantastic bat, potentially elite level bat, at least in AAA. And that could become a viable major league bat in the show, but he's not good defensively. He is very, very rough. So he can play first or DH, really. You don't really want him playing second base. You really don't want him playing third. They've tried him a little bit in the outfield, and he's not that good there. He's sort of like Harold Ramirez again, but from the left side. A guy who, yeah, I guess he can play first. He can kind of play right field, but you don't really want him any. He's mostly DH. Curtis Meade, this is a suggestion that, one, his defense is much better than Aranda's, and two, they're comfortable letting him play in the field. Because now you can have Isak Paredes be on the bench or moved around. And already we've seen Meade at third and Paredes at first. We've seen Meade at third and Paredes at second base. So Paredes' versatility is really key. And Meade's ability to actually play major league defense is allowing the team to actually call him up and run this right now. So getting a better bat in the roster, in the active roster for Brujan, is allowing them to take some more chances defensively. Whereas I think with Aranda and the lack of days off, there really wasn't that opportunity for most of this season.
Yeah, and also the team had really been struggling versus left-handed pitching over the last couple months. I think they were towards the bottom of the leaderboards, if not at the bottom, for WRC Plus versus left-handed pitching. We saw them struggle with Tarik Skubal from the left side. I'm really not sure if they have a lot of games against left-handers coming up, but we did see the lineup, Curtis Meade's first big league start against Skubal come, and the lineup just feels a little deeper, a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Against left-handed pitchers, so I'll just read it off real quick. Diaz, Franco, Paredes, Arozarena, Ramirez, Meade, Margot, Siri, Pinto. So it was nine. Wander's a switch hitter, but nine guys that we're going to be hitting from the right side against Skubal. And that, you know, can take off. Josh Lowe doesn't have to play against lefties all the time. Neither does Luke Raley. Neither does Brandon Lowe. I think Lau, you'd be more than comfortable having him in there against lefties, especially with how hot he's been as of late. But yeah, I think it's different, right? It's not a move I'd expect the Rays to make. You usually expect them to just prioritize defensive versatility and just defensive ability in general and speed and Curtis Mead really doesn't have any of that, but they do love his bat. They loved his bat when they traded for him, and then they watched it become one of their best prospects. So exciting, right? I mean, it's exciting to see young players come up. He's still in like 22. I think he turns 23 this year. So incredibly young, which is something I think we need to take into account. I have no idea if he'll be on a postseason roster. You'd imagine Taylor Walls getting healthy might change that. But maybe it's an audition. Maybe you get to a point where you pick him over Harold Ramirez. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's really the key here, is that it is sort of a extended audition. And it's probably going to be something that you see him next year have a prominent role on this team. This year, it's a matter of how quickly can he contribute right now? And so, yeah, it's an extended audition to see if he can contribute to winning games, to generating runs. And if it is better than Harold Ramirez, then you potentially don't have Harold on the playoff roster. He's still with the team. He's still there. But for a certain round, especially if you're facing a lot of or if you're facing a lot of lefties, maybe Josh Lowe isn't on the playoff roster. Ooh. You have Harold, and you have Margot, and you have Curtis Mead. So I think that really kind of depends upon the type, the lineup, the team you're facing. Right now, I think Curtis Mead, he came in, he started against a lefty. He also started again versus a righty in the rubber match of the series. So I do think he's a guy that they do like his bat quite a bit. And I think you're going to see him get some run. Cash said that basically you're going to see him playing pretty much only third base or DH and sometimes second base. So only third base, except for
when he's not at third,
two other positions. So one third of all the possible positions, but only those. He has not really played first base that much, and he's played in the minors. But I think, you know, you just don't want to overload a guy's plate. You know, you got a classic Moneyball thing. You know, first base might seem easy, but it's incredibly hard. So
let him do what he knows. Yeah. And you really want him to focus on hitting. Like I watched, I think it was against Manning today, just like dotted, you know, outside corner, right at the knees, just like a 91 mile an hour fastball. Like it wasn't like overpowering stuff, but it's just like, damn, that's probably not a spot that AAA pitchers are just hitting with two strikes very often, and it just froze him. And it's just that perspective of how different it is making that jump from AAA to the big leagues. But still exciting to have
him. It's tough. Yeah, he got his first hit out of the way. His very first pitch you saw in the majors, he drilled a nice little single. He had a really good walk in the third game of the series. He had a really bad way outside pitch that was called a strike to move the count to 1-2. That's a huge, that's like maybe the big momentum swing type of pitch. He spit on a slider outside. He then spit on two really well executed pitches from Manning that were just off. One again a little further out, fastball outside on 2-2. They got it to 3-2 that was not called, and he didn't swing at it. And then finally on 3-2, a very good curve right at the bottom of the zone, or a gyro slider that he watched right through to draw the walk. That's a very impressive at bat, because getting down 1-2 after you get a bad call, probably want to extend the zone, and that slider out was a really smart pitch from Manning to say, like, okay, let's let the rookie, you know, kind of chase this out of the zone. He didn't extend, and he really, you know, held in there. So I'm excited to see it. This is easily the best hitting prospect the Rays have promoted since Wander Franco. Josh Lowe was a very talented position prospect, but he was, at the time of call-up, he was not top 50, I don't believe. Curtis Mead has been a top 30 position prospect, and almost all pure hitting. Not just athleticism. Like Josh Lowe, great athlete, But Curtis Meade, it's all bat. If he is going to be a lasting major leaguer, it's because he's a hitter. And so this is a exciting promotion because the Rays have a lot of pitching that we've seen come up through the list. This is now another really, really talented, high-level offensive prospect. So excited to see where he goes over the next few weeks.
Yeah, very exciting. I guess it's time we talk about the reason or the player he replaced on the active roster, Shane McClanahan, who was experiencing some forearm tightness on the outside of his arm and down into his elbow is how it was described. And after the game, Kevin Cash even said that he wasn't worried about it. We still don't know the severity of the injury and how much time he'll miss. He is on the injured list, so at least 2 weeks. But we found out, Mark Topkin reported that he was headed to California to get a second opinion from, I don't know how to pronounce this doctor's name, but he's a doctor that hasn't brought a lot of good news to a lot of major league pitchers in recent times. Darby, I mean, if the Rays lose Shane McClanahan for an extended period of time, what does that do to the season?
If Shane's out for an extended period of time, I think it's safe for the folks in Ballmer to start printing some AL East t-shirts. Mm. Get those ready in the black and orange. I think postseason, it becomes a lot more challenging. I think a rotation with Glasnow, Eflin, Zavale, and then the true ace, Zach Little, or Littell, that still, I think, can compete in a lot of ways. And I think even that rotation itself is not that much worse.
It's better. It might even be better
than Baltimore's rotation, but Baltimore's rotation is one, all overperforming, two, impeccably healthy. There hasn't been even a blister. They're just impossibly healthy. Kyle Bradish is going to start every single game and perform at the 98th percentile every single game. That's just this season. So I do think without McClanahan, I think you need, like, you're down three games already. You have not been able to gain any ground on this winning streak. You've actually lost a game on this entire successful road trip. So I think that if he's out for the rest of the season, I just think you got to, I'd be more focused on wild card and matchups in that regard. Then the other big thing, the other reason for that is you only have four more games against Baltimore in general. So you really do not have a lot of ways to gain ground yourself. Besides the fact that Baltimore is facing the easiest schedule remaining of anybody in the AL East, the Rays are facing, I think, the hardest or second hardest of anybody in the AL East without having another one of those ace level guys. Or, and the other thing is, if Shane is healthy, but he is just really, really exhausted and fatigued, and he's not performing at Shane McClanahan first half levels, that's the other part of the scenario, is he could come back and be like, okay, the arm is fine, but he's still like kind of struggling with command, and it's more of a spotty 4 or 5 innings rather than a dazzling 6-7. That also kind of sets up a similar way. The Rays need to make up a lot of ground, and they're going to need a lot of help to do that. So they really have to be able to win a lot of series. And having somebody like Shane that you can count on to deliver one of those wins really helps solidify that lineup. I think if he's out, I don't see them being able to overtake Baltimore in that scenario.
Yeah, I don't know. Is this just a reality that I'm going to have to eventually come to grips with, the fact that you're going to lose at least one, but probably two starting pitchers every year to elbow injury or shoulder injury? Like, it just, I know that pitchers get hurt, right? Like, it happens. It's not a natural movement, but now we see guys throwing harder than ever before and with different mechanics than ever before. And not to say the guys weren't getting hurt before every starting pitcher could throw 100, because they definitely were, and maybe some pitched through it, and maybe that affected their performance. But man, is it brutal to see again, we'll hold out hope that Shane is okay, but it just feels ominous. We haven't really lost him yet for an extended period of time. If, you know, he's on the IL with Drew Rasmussen, who had elbow surgery, not Tommy John, but he's had it already in his career. Jeffrey Springs, who had Tommy John. Shane Boz, who's recovering from Tommy John. And Josh Fleming, who's got elbow issues. It just feels like it's never going to end, right? Like, Shane will get healthy and someone else will get hurt. Is this reality now?
Yeah, I think that's baseball now. I think it requires so much. I think baseball now has prioritized, and the value, the money, is so much higher for pitchers to throw a couple ticks faster.
Yeah.
To bend just a few more degrees, to spin just a few more RPMs. That's tens of millions of dollars. And I think losing a year and a half of your time is just cost of doing business, right? Like, the baseball doesn't pay like a long time, doesn't pay Ryan Yarbrough a lot of money to be okay for a long time, okay and healthy and available. But they pay a ton of money to Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
A guy who has hurt most of his career, put together a couple healthy seasons, got a good chunk of money for a one-year deal in San Francisco, stayed healthy, got a nice long deal from New York, got hurt, been hurt, just came back, hurt again. I think you look at Houston and you saw they lost Luis Garcia. Lance McCullers was coming back from an injury, had some setbacks. He's done now for the year. Most of the Yankees, it's not just Severino's been struggling to come back from being healthy. Nestor Cortez was down and all for most of the season. Frankie Montas, I might have disappeared into a void. I just think that is the Dodgers. Actually, look at the entire Dodgers lineup. You know, Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw missed some time, but Walker Buehler, his arm was injured. They lost. They just got back. Some of their guys, it's just been a consistent thing. I think you just see the value, the money, the experience of being able to be the top guy. If you can hit 100, 101, if you can spin it at that late rates, the reward is just so great that you just have to go for it. And so I think you will get lucky and you will not have those injuries, and you're gonna have a year where maybe one guy gets hurt or maybe nobody gets hurt and you just get lucky and you get fortunate. But I think that's the risk in the game. This year the Rays have had it worse than any other year in their franchise and worse than most other teams right now. They're injured list pitchers are the best rotation in baseball.
Yeah, I agree.
Like there's an argument. There's an argument to be made. It's not hands down, but you have an argument to be made that Shane McClanahan, Drew Rasmussen, Shane Boz, Jeffrey Springs.
Is there a better and then Josh Fleming pitcher than Shane McClanahan? Like maybe Max Fried when he's healthy.
I mean, there's an argument that it's Jeffrey Springs, who's also on the same injured list. You might like he was pitching better than Shane McClanahan. He was pitching as the best lefty in at least the American League when he got hurt. So yeah, I mean, like that's at least two out of like the top five left-handed pitchers this year are on the Rays IL, and I think that's the cost of doing business. I think it is. I think it's sad. It sucks. You don't want to see, nobody I think wants to see any of these guys being hurt. You want to see them perform. But I do think people get overloaded in the idea of like, how do we prevent that? And I think literally, if you could figure that out, every single team in baseball would pay you a lot of money to have that exclusive ability, because health and availability is by far profitable. But if the answer is throw 85 miles an hour, they're going to be like, well, hard pass, because I'm not going to be able to convince Shane McClanahan to throw 92, 93.
Yep.
Because he's not going to be that good. He's going to be available, but he's not going to be that good.
It's like, there's got to be, I don't know, because like you said, it's chasing money for these young kids that are growing up playing year-round baseball now in states like Florida, Texas, Georgia, California. They're told velocity, velocity, velocity. It's what gets you college scholarships, mm-hmm. and that is very true. It's what gets you professional contracts. And so it's a hard thing to balance. With that being said, guys are going to continue to try to throw harder and harder, right? Like hitting 100 used to be the benchmark. And now you've got not many, but multiple guys that can hit 102, 103 pretty consistently. You look at Duran in Minnesota and Ben Joyce with the Angels, like these guys that can easily throw over 100. How long can that last? Like, is this bubble going to burst eventually? And are we going to go back to something more, maybe you'd see in the 90s and 2000s? I don't think so, but it's just like, it's such a bummer to, it's hard to have like, starting pitchers who are stars in this league, because they're never pitching. Like they take the ball every fifth day, and then it's like, okay, they're all going to have an IL stint. Some of them it'll be 2 weeks. Some of them it'll be 2 months. Some of them it'll be 2 years. Like Lance McCullers is going on almost 3 years since he pitched in the big leagues.
With it's like with like somebody like McCullers, he pitched like a few games as a shell of himself before he got hurt again. So it's like it's really been so long before you've seen like a full season, like actual full strength. And
I mean, you look at Brendan McKay, Brent Honeywell, these top prospects that dealt with multiple arm injuries before they even got to the big leagues, right? It's not like you know they pitched for 15 years in the big leagues and then their arm fell off. Like you'd expect. It's like this guy's 22 and he's had like 3 arm surgeries. I don't know. It just I don't know how to get. I don't know if we're ever going to switch paths here, but it's just it's sad. And I hope Shane is all right. Hopefully, like we're doing all this. This conversation, and it turns out he's just going to miss a month and they're going to ramp it back up and he'll be back and ready to go for the postseason. But it's just not looking good right now.
Yeah, I think you never know, because we still see guys like Justin Verlander pitching and Max Scherzer who are still staying healthy and still performing. So I think some guys just maybe you're luckier than others, and maybe some guys just have the genetics that it makes it work out. But yeah, I hope for Shane's sake that he's able to rest, rehab, and be back this year to make that September, October push.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to go back to Wander Franco, because I know we wanted to talk a little bit about him and kind of the performances we're seeing from him. A little more consistency at the plate. He looks a little more settled in. I think the biggest thing, though, is his shortstop defense. Going into this season, like I was like, maybe you move Wander off third. You keep him healthier, less miles on his legs, and he plays third. You've got Taylor Walls, who by some metrics don't like him, but seems to be like an above average at worst defensive shortstop and maybe a gold glove winner at best. But Wander Franco has made shortstop his. I think it was always going to be that way. But talk to me about his defensive abilities and what the Rays have on their hands here outside of Wander Franco, the hitter, because we know how he can hit.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right? Is like a guy like Taylor Walls has been able to make a major league career as a sterling defensive shortstop without a bat. Wander Franco, just as a hitter, is a major leaguer. But you go back, I was actually just trying to look up. So Fangraphs rated him on the 20-80 scale of scouting, 20 being no value at all, and 80 being absolute elite. He was ranked as a 50 perceived value and 55 future value in terms of fielding, in terms of that tool, which is solidly above average, right? A lot of scouting reports basically stated a guy, and it's, again, it's a lot of projections, but you're like, you're seeing a guy who's like 19, 18, 20, who's fairly big and muscular. And you're like, well, I see a lot of Jose Ramirez in him, and that at that size, he's going to keep growing and he's going to probably need to be moved off of shortstop. There was a lot of scouting reports kind of had that. His defense is pretty solid. It's actually, and you know, if he was a above average defensive, or at least average defensive shortstop with that bat, you would absolutely take that. That's a huge win. That's an extremely valuable position that he's able to not embarrass himself in. But a lot of the reports were he's eventually going to have to move over. He's eventually going to have to move over, and he's going to be a great third baseman because he has the arm strength. The thing is, early on, what we saw was a solid defensive shortstop, above average, actually making some plays. Definitely not somebody I would be rushing to move off, but there was, you know, some ideas of like maybe him at third and Walls at shortstop is maybe the future of the position. Well, this year, Wander Franco came in, he slimmed down a little bit, and he has put together a elite, not good, not great, elite level defensive season. If you just watch one game, watch the Detroit Apple TV game, because he makes four or five of the best shortstop plays of the season in that game. And smooth. Two of them are absolute highlight reel diving catches, but he makes a few others where he absolutely gets to a ball and makes it look way easier than it actually is. I was looking up the stats today. Current top three in defensive runs saved of any position. So just the best defensive players in any position. Fernando Tatis Jr. in right field, which is its own impressiveness that he was able to come back, not as a shortstop, who is actually kind of a below average by a lot of metrics shortstop, and become a great defensive right fielder. Ryan McMahon of Colorado at third. And then Wander Franco, the highest rated shortstop by defensive runs saved. Top three in outs above average, which is another defensive metric. Wander Franco comes in second, just behind Dansby Swanson, who again is more for his defense than the bat. The bat's solid, but the carrying tool is the defense. Wander is four full defensive runs saved higher than Dansby. By that metric, Dansby is one out above average above Wander by that metric. So Wander Franco is a top five to really, by these metrics, a top 1-2 shortstop by defense in all of baseball. By all means, Gold Glove, Silver Slugger, possibly Platinum Glove, yeah, are all not only on the table, but he is a front runner for all of those right now. And that, as a 22-year-old, again, we talked about Curtis Mead, who's like the same age. He is just making his major league debut. He's going to be probably really bad for a while, and he's going to get better, and he's going to show flashes, but he's going to struggle because that's the natural progression of rookies. Wander Franco, at the same age, has put together multiple successful, very good major league seasons. This year, he is putting together a incredible season. And this might be the last season that he's not in that 6, 7, 8 win above replacement level. Like, this is elite level territory. If he stays healthy, the bat, the glove, the power is even starting to flash higher. I don't think we have even properly, and we've praised him for many episodes. I don't even think we have properly rated how insanely good he is. The ceiling, we just do not know. And I think that is something that even in these old scouting reports you look at, a lot of people do say, though, is like there a lot of these scouts and prospect evaluators basically look at it and go, he's great. But the scary thing is, I literally don't know how good he can be. Like every time I'm like, this might be the best shortstop prospect I've ever scouted, they're saying like, he actually might be better than everything I'm saying. And yeah. And so far, he is starting to flash that. The defensive progression that he's made this year, not only is he not somebody that looks like he needs to move off a shortstop, he's somebody that is a huge impact weapon as a defender alone that could carry that. That is just remarkable. And he's 22, and I still cannot get over that.
Yeah, I mean, when the bat really kind of rounds out, I think Shohei goes in his own tier, right? But Wander, I don't think, is too far off from joining that tier where, like, Ronald Acuna is, where Freddie Freeman is, where Mookie Betts is like, these are the best players in baseball. And maybe, you know, Acuna is not even known as much for his defense, but has the power, has the speed. That's another thing. Wander Franco's got 29 stolen bases already this year.
That's
14 home runs. Like his WRC plus is at 119. He's having a very similar season to Francisco Lindor, who Lindor has leaned more into the power, less on base, but very good defense at shortstop. Both switch hitters. Again, he's always drawn comparisons to Jose Ramirez. Maybe he's got a right hook like Jose Ramirez does. But yeah, it's incredible. In the home run that he hit against Garrett Cole right before, you know, the game I ended up turning off, I just couldn't get over how quickly his hands got inside the baseball and he was able to turn on it. And you know, I think I said in Slack today, like, I think he's got somewhere down the line, it might not be for 10 years, a 40 home run season in him. You see some of these players that come up as these great athletes, like a Miguel Cabrera or a Hanley Ramirez. I picked both guys that came up with the Marlins. But then later in their career, really start to focus more on the power. I could see Wander Franco maybe when he does get to that point where he's playing third base and, you know, getting some DH days, that he really just leans into the power, and he's got such fast hands and such great strength that I could see him. You know, next year he could be a 30 home run guy. I think we've seen enough flashes of that power for that to be a possibility. But man, yeah, he's going to be a perennial all-star and a perennial MVP candidate. And he's locked up for the rest of his prime.
Another 12 years.
What's going to be, I hate celebrating this because I want Wander to get as much money as he deserves, but he's locked up at what's going to be under market value for pretty much the remainder of the contract. It's the largest deal the Rays have ever given out, but it's still very much a team-friendly deal. But Wander will be taken care of, and so will the Rays as long as he's their shortstop.
It's not quite as team-friendly as all of the Atlanta deals. It's not a team heist like Acuna's deal, I think the sky is the limit, right? Like, I think he is. You mentioned like guys like Shohei. He is in his own category because nobody ever in the history of baseball has done what he's done. Who knew that the Babe Ruth comparisons would be unfair to Shohei because he's better than Babe Ruth because he did both pitching and hitting at the same time at this level. And Ruth did it separately, which is incredible, but very different skill set. So even that, I do think Wander is in a very small category of players who have a potential like 10 wins above replacement season in them, like a high level. Like we were talking about this before we went on the air last week or couple days ago for the trade deadline one about we were looking at an old, we were talking about the Immaculate Grid, and we were looking at an old MVP race where A-Rod finished second and he had a 9.6 wins above replacement season. Ken Griffey Jr. came in fourth at 9.4 wins above replacement that year. I think there are a few players in baseball that have that ability that, like, if everything clicks, I think there's a lot of guys saying, oh, if everything clicks, you can have an amazing year and still be and win an MVP, but maybe not be at that level. I do think Wander is in that rarefied air of like Shohei, Acuna.
I think Corbin Carroll is going to be up there for
Corbin Carroll is absolutely. I think Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy that's potential with Kansas City. He is starting to like, again, it's like he has not shown as much as Wander so far or Carroll, but this last couple weeks, he is like, that's the guy that we were seeing. There are some of these guys that have that Julio. Absolutely. We saw flashes. I think there's a few. I always thought if Buxton could ever stay healthy for 162 games, which it may not ever happen, he's a guy that could have that with that defense and power and speed. But yeah, it's not a large list. Like, I don't know if Mookie Betts can still do it at his age. Like, he was that, but I don't know if he still has that anymore. I think guys like Olsen and Freeman at first base, the defense just drags them down. But they're like elite level. So it's not to say like, you know, this is a diss, but I think there is like a certain like high level, you know, holy crap. Bryce Harper in his prime, like doing that. Mike Trout in his prime doing that. Mike Trout, even now, he could still also probably roll out of bed and do that because he's Mike Trout. But Wander being in that range, like in that level, that's that extra gear. Like, yeah, we've seen Randy go off for months and like take over in October. But like Wander is like better. Like he is the best player talent-wise that the Rays franchise has ever had. And I think it's by a very large margin. Now, he has to realize it. He has to keep on going. He has to stay healthy. All of that caveats aside. But talent, the talent level, he is a top one percenter in all of baseball talent-wise.
Yeah, man. You know, I can't think of a better way to wrap up this show is just talking about his performances because, yeah, I mean, on Apple TV on Friday night, with those crisp 4K cameras, he looked super sharp out there, and I'm just so happy that we have him locked up. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. We had some good news. We had some bad news, right? The vibes meter is kind of going up and down, I'm sure. I just want to know, like with Shane McClanahan, like if he's out for the next 2 years, just let me know.
Rip that Band-Aid off.
I'll be fine either way because, again, it's inevitable now with pitchers. Just keep the rest of our pitchers healthy for this year, the rest of this year, please. But, yeah, I think the vibes are kind of up and down, and we're just moving along. It's still kind of like –
trending in the right direction. Trending where there's some wind. It's not a stiff wind yet, but there's some wind. It's by the sails. It's slowly – getting out of
Baltimore
the harbor.
Baltimore has got the wind right behind their sails, and they're zooming past
the giant Clipper ship. They have the will of Poseidon is just carrying them along. So sometimes, you know, you can't fight the gods.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. As always, make sure to head on over to draysbay.com to check out all the great coverage. And you can find us wherever you get your podcast, but make sure to follow or subscribe so that every new episode is downloaded directly to your device. For Darby Robinson, I'm Brett Rutherford. We'll talk to you guys next week.